Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Oh, all right. How many of you right now are currently caring for children and aging adults right now? How many of you think you will be? Yeah. Okay. And how many of you feel stressed and overwhelmed? Okay, not good, but we're going to work on that. That's what we're going to do right here. Our panelists have all been there. They've all experienced it. They've been through the pitfalls. They have their own experience professionally and personally to share with you. And the goal in this hour is for you to walk out with some strategies, some resources, coping and planning tools, and most importantly, hope. I'm going to share a story very quickly that I've never shared before. 10 years ago, when my father became ill, my two younger sisters and I were completely unprepared. We're all spread out all over the country. My parents were divorced. Our relationships with my father were very difficult. And we were all working full-time and raising kids. And my youngest sister, who was probably least prepared, she really wanted to do it, she moved my father to be near her at a facility. And my other sister and I said we would help financially and we would come when we could. But what happened was disastrous. And financially, it took a toll on all of us, but mostly my youngest sister. It actually contributed to destroying her marriage, and it caused a rift in our family that was so great we are still working to repair it. Some of it was just because of the dynamics of my family, and some was because we fell into this crisis with no plan. We had all stuck our heads in the sand, we closed our eyes, and we just hoped for the best. What we do out of love, but how can we care for everyone without slipping into a financial and mental abyss? How do we approach it so we do our best to care for the ones we love, but also care for ourselves as well. Let me introduce our fine panelists. First, Amanda Bennett, on the end here, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, an executive editor right now at Bloomberg News. She's a former editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and now she's the author of a new book just released this summer called The Cost of Hope. And her book is a memoir about the price paid financially and mentally as she cared for her dying husband while also caring for her two children. She speaks from exhaustive research and personal experience. Please welcome Amanda. Jody Gastfriend is the Vice President of Senior Care Services at Care.com. She's a licensed clinical social worker with more than 25 years of experience in the field of elder care. She also has cared for a parent with dementia for over a decade. Her advice and tips are often sought by NBC and Fox News, and she's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. Please welcome Jody. And Dawn Jones has been public about her ongoing battle with stage 4 breast cancer. She was diagnosed the first time in 2000. I believe it was the same day or same time her mother had a heart attack. 2 years earlier, she'd started her own company, Image Makers Incorporated. Now she started a breast cancer foundation called Live, Love, Walk Sexy. I love your style. While she's also helping to take care of her mother, still with dementia, and grandchildren and children, Dawn Jones. I want to ask each of the panelists to tell us a little bit more about their story, but right now I also want you to keep in mind any questions you have, write them down, because I'm going to give us a full half hour for you to talk directly to the panelists and ask questions. So think about that as our panelists speak. Let's start with Amanda.
Thank you so much, Luann, and thank you, everybody. And I'd like to tell you my story a little bit as a story, because I was caring for someone who was older, only in the sense that he was my husband. He was 12 years older than I was. And we didn't have a plan, and we didn't expect this to happen. We found the cancer by accident when we were looking for something else, so it came to us out of the blue. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about my husband, because my story is about why it is we do these things that we do. Any of us have the opportunity to walk away if we wanted to. We do it because we love people. We do it because we've made promises to people. We do it because we care about the family relationships, even as in Luann's case, they're tense and difficult. And my story is about the effect of that illness and the caring for him and our hope and the effect on our lives and on our marriage and on our love for each other. We met back in a China that was so long ago, so far away, that the capital was still called Peking. And the very first thing my husband ever said to me, the person then, was a lie. He pretended to be someone else in order to get me to talk to him at a party. And when I found him later on, I said, well, you know, you said you were a Fulbright scholar studying Chinese and Soviet relations, and you're the head of the Soybean Association? What's going on? He said, you know, you were cute. You were a journalist. How long would you have talked to me if I told you I was in soybeans? Well, and the first thing I said to him after that was, you jerk. Only the word wasn't jerk. He turned out to be an extraordinary human being. He spoke 7 languages. He played 15 musical instruments. He had been a San Francisco cable car operator. He worked in a prison. There wasn't anything that he couldn't do. And he, extraordinarily enough, left his career doing soybeans to support me and my career as a journalist. And so I embarked on a demanding, time-consuming, difficult job with his total support until he was diagnosed with cancer. We spent 7 years fighting that cancer completely and totally aggressively. We totally went to the mat to do everything. We did surgery. We did watchful waiting. We did FDA-approved treatments. We did clinical trials. We did experimental drugs. We did everything. So it was an all-out, totally consuming job. I was the breadwinner. I was the mother of the children. I had a demanding job. And I was also, as most of people in the room here, I was the care manager. I was the one who went face down to the internet. I was the one who went to the doctors with him. I was the one who carried all the documents because he was too scared. Did that sound familiar? So what we'll talk about later on as we all tell the rest of our stories, afterwards I had something available to me that most people didn't, which is I'm an investigative journalist. And after he died, a year after he died, I was still struggling with the thing I bet everyone in this room is struggling was, did I do the right thing? Did I do enough? Did I do too much? Could I have done more? Could I have changed the outcome? Did I shortchange my children? Did I shortchange my husband? I was struggling with all those questions. As an investigative journalist, I had the ability to say, all of a sudden it occurred to me, I can go back. I can retrace the journey from the other side. I can get all the hospital records, all the medical records, all the doctors. I went back and interviewed all the doctors, all the caregivers to try and see, I know what I was thinking, what I was going through. What were they thinking? What were they going through? And as I hope to be able to talk to all of you, what I found left me with a great sense of peace and achievement and a great sense of success and happiness for myself, because what I saw was there can't be any woulda, coulda, shouldas. I maybe didn't make 100% of the right decisions. Neither did any doctor. Neither did any hospital. Neither did any nurse. We were all flawed people. There was no perfection in this system. And as women, we demand perfection of ourselves. There is no perfection. I came to the conclusion that I did a fantastic job. I did great. And what I'd like to tell all of you in the course of this is, whatever you're doing great. quit beating yourself up on it. I had the ability to go back and look at the other side of the equation, see what we spent for it, see what everyone was doing, see what everyone was thinking, and the conclusion I gave was that I was amazing. And you guys are all amazing too, and that's the message I'd like to leave with you.
Whichever one works, Joe.
Good morning. 10 years ago, my father wandered away from a family gathering and got lost. And we were all wondering where he went. We were looking for him. When we finally found him emerged from the woods, confused and somewhat disheveled, we said, "Dad, where did you go?" And he said, "Well, I went to pick up my dry cleaning." And that made no sense at all. And we started putting two and two together. My father was always a bit of an absent-minded professor, so certain things we attributed to that. But there were other things that were really aberrant and not typical of his character. He had a tremendous sense of direction. And he was very, very organized about his schedule. He started to miss appointments. We had him evaluated, and he was diagnosed with dementia. And he has been in a nursing home for the past 4 years. And when I tell people that, typically people sigh and look sad and say they're sorry. But we have really approached this caregiving journey, and I give my mother a tremendous amount of credit. The glass is half full. And we focus on what is still there. Now, there is a lot that's missing. When I visit my dad and I ask him who I am, he usually comes up with three or four different names before he remembers mine. But he knows who I am, thankfully. And we sing, and we play games, and there is quality of life despite a devastating illness. And that is one of the gifts that my father has given me and has really fueled my passion professionally, helping family caregivers, so many of whom are sandwiched between their children as I was. I had three teenagers and a husband who worked full-time and traveled. I worked full-time. I was traveling back and forth. And I see the kind of stress that people go through. I had an advantage that I knew something about healthcare. I'd been working in the field for over 20 years. And I knew something about elder care. It didn't mitigate the stress, but it helped provide me with some guidelines. And one of the things that I really try to help instill with family caregivers is that it's important not to be making decisions in the emergency room in the midst of a crisis, because you limit your options. And I go around the country and give presentations on being proactive and what you should learn about caregiving, even if you haven't started the journey. And there is no roadmap specifically for your situation. Being flexible, being knowledgeable, and never saying never. I hear so many people saying, "I will never put my mom in a nursing home. I will never do this." And what happens so often is that a situation changes. In my situation, my dad being in a nursing home was the safest option for him, as well as for my mom. And he is actually content and well cared for in the nursing home. That might not be the right thing for other people, but it's really important to make decisions along the journey that are specific to the needs of the person receiving care. So understanding something about the very complex senior care world, I can't tell you how many times people are shocked to learn that Medicare doesn't pay for long-term care in a nursing home, and the average cost of a nursing home in the United States is $80,000 a year. And we ask people, "Do you have long-term care insurance? Do you have private pay? Do you have Medicaid?" And usually people are like a deer in front of headlights because there's no course on this, and usually people find this out when it's happening. And there is a real physical, emotional, and financial toll on caregivers. That's real. There is caregiver burnout. There's a lot of research to suggest that caregivers are at more risk for depression, for chronic illness, and for not taking care of themselves. So we have to be mindful about caregiving and realize that getting help is really essential. Taking care of you as the caregiver is important to not only maintain your own health, but to be able to provide the right kind of care for your family member. And I think, lastly, I would like to mention that there's a lot of emphasis on the burdens, the challenges, and the stress of caregiving, which is all very real. But one of the things that I have learned through my own personal journey, as well as talking to so many family caregivers, is that there are hidden gifts of caregiving. There are many rewards. And in order to be able to take advantage of those rewards, we can't be flooded with the logistics and with all the to-dos. We have to have a team in place to be able to help us through this process. Thank you.
Good day. How are you? I'm Dawn Jones, and I am a 12-year breast cancer survivor. Actually... But wait, the best part is stage 4, inflammatory breast cancer. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little choked up because it's becoming surreal. I have no evidence of disease. And I am a patient at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. And this journey has changed me forever. I would never turn back to who I was before. And along the way, when I was first diagnosed, I had 2 children, 12 and 17, and my mother had a heart attack. I was just diagnosed. I was a little nuts. Fast forward now, my mom came to live with me last year as I'm starting new treatment. She does have dementia, and it's been rough. And you're so right. You do need a team of people. I was very blessed with having support where I least thought it would be, and being a patient at Cancer Treatment Centers of America, going for my therapies, they have volunteers that come in. My God, it was like my mother was being renewed. They would take her and do beading with her and do art classes with her and do little things while I'm going through my treatment, because it's very difficult to try to focus on your treatment when she's looking for me. You know, she'll forget that she was with this volunteer and think that she's lost or something like that. I found that to be very challenging for myself. And you do need a team of people around you. She, however, we haven't really talked about putting her in a nursing home or assisted living. We're trying to do it amongst the sisters, amongst the daughters. And my sister, we all live kind of close now. That became very challenging. My brother is the executor of her estate and everything, so he really makes all the decisions for her. And we kind of crossed paths with that when we came to some disagreements, and nobody wants to talk about it, really. And I found the challenge of how do we get real good dialogue going on? Yes, I'm here right now. I'm running her to her doctor's appointments. I'm running myself to my doctor's appointments. You know, but something's got to give. Everybody was supposed to be putting in time to facilitate the movement, give me a break, but everybody, this way everybody can come in and fill in, and we all will get our breaks accordingly. That didn't happen. It did happen for 2 weeks, but 2 weeks out of a year or so, it's not good. What I would like to say is I started doing things with my mother because her memory was so poor, and I'm trying to look it up because I really wasn't that informed about dementia, and it was saddening to see her, you know, forget, and she's trying to call something, and that was just so heart-wrenching. But I started playing some old music that my dad would play, and she was like, oh my God, I swear to God, my mother will remember you owe her money, and she will remember the words to every old song. And it was just, it just took on a whole different light. I started trying to give her things like old pictures that she had, music, and take her to places that she liked to go when I remember being younger, because she used to take us everywhere. The biggest thing that changed is going to sound funny. I bought her a push-up bra. And when we would go out, I like my makeup. She started to, like in a 3-month time period, she started to, I used to see more of her old self than the dementia. Like I was sparking something in her, and I guess bringing her memory back to who she was. And she's in there putting on lipstick. I took her to meet a male friend of mine who, he just works on our cars in the family. And she's like, oh, this is my boyfriend. We're going to see my boyfriend today. So she was really excited about that. The logistic part of it, I never saw myself as being a caregiver to anyone since I was my own caregiver going through this journey. But I have a family at CTCA, and then I have my girlfriends that are in other states that support me. The sandwich generation now moving to my children who moved in with me, my son, his wife, and the grandchild. That's a challenge. It is, because I got to tell you, that little boy is just, he just distracts me so much. I can't get anything done. He's really adorable, but I'm praying and hoping that they're getting themselves together, because they needed a change. They needed to reorganize and pull things together for themselves as a family, and I'm there to support them. But that gets really difficult. It does. It gets really difficult. I'm like, oh, my God, who is this child of mine? No, because, you know, like, I didn't think I was really a nag, but I think I kind of am. Because, no, seriously, because there's a certain way to do things, and I'm like, why would you do it that way when you can just simply do it this way? And so now I'm getting caught between taking care of myself, taking care of the baby on their days when they can't, you know, when they're at work or whatever, then dealing with my mom. I think that's a bit much.
It's a lot.
But it's good. I mean, I'm learning how to manage.
That's all you can do. You all touch on some really important themes. How many of you in your current situations just did not have any planning, just were thrown into whatever happened? I almost feel like most people are. So my question for each of you is, so you're already in it. How do you create that team? I mean, or what's the first thing you should do when you are in that crisis mode and you realize, oh my gosh, your life is going to stop and you have to deal with this and you have to figure it out and you have no idea what you're doing? What's the first thing you should do? Jody, what?
Well, I think it depends on the setting. If I actually just had a conversation with a woman right before I got here who told me her story, and people often do, and she said it was like a tsunami when she first heard about her father's illness. And she called a friend, and the first thing she did was have a conversation with a social worker in the hospital. Because I think you have to sort of step back and gather information and understand what your options are. And talking to a professional who understands the landscape is really important. And in some cases, that might be a social worker or a geriatric care manager. It might be a physician, a geriatrician. But I think you have to really be able to gather the information so you can make the right choices. And one of the factors that really impacts your choices, and this is just reality, is how much money you have to spend on care. And if you don't have private pay funds available, and your family member's not on Medicaid, and you're sort of in that in-between, you need to understand what does care cost and what can I afford? Because that's going to narrow your options for care, too. So I think getting some of the real tactical information before making a decision is really important.
Amanda, what do you feel like, what did you do when all this hit? And what's the best thing you think you did? Besides love and care, of course.
You know, I think listening to your stories, I think I probably made pretty much every mistake that there was to make. He was my husband. He wasn't my parent. I wasn't expecting this. We were expecting to go camping. We weren't expecting to be in the hospital. So, but looking back, I'm not sure I can see what I would have done completely differently. You know, how many of you want to sit here and think about your parents and planning for something that's going to be going wrong? I think I'm gonna say something a little different than everyone else here says. So just in a little bit of a counterpoint. And I think one of the good things about a session like this is you can listen to all of us and decide what you want to take and what you don't want to take. But I have the experience right now where I'm observing two families via my children. It's, again, families that are facing this quite young, where the father in the family has suddenly become quite ill, and the entire family is now being thrown into it. And one thing I can observe is that you need to build a team, but I think these families are almost overwhelmed by the amount of feedback they're getting. And I was watching this 17-year-old girl and watching her cell phone go off. And her cell phone's going off, and it's going off, and it's going off, and it's going off. And everybody's coming in and giving them all advice and giving them pieces of information, and there's feedback and support. And in some ways, I think they're almost, the word tsunami is the reason I thought about this. There was this overwhelming tsunami coming in. So figuring out how you find your own place and who you are. I see this exactly with the other one. It's a friend of my son's, and I say, look, I want to rush over there. I want to help out because I've been through this. And he's saying, keep away. There are just too many people there. She's getting all this advice. She's getting all this, and the noise level was so high that it was almost overwhelming. We chose a different path, and this is the piece of advice I want to give people. If it's right for you, don't let yourself be talked into something different. My husband was a very private person, and we used professional help a lot. I mean, we went and found the best doctors, the best hospitals, the best care, but we kept our story very, very, very private. We did not post things. We didn't set up Facebook pages. We didn't solicit input from our friends. Some of our friends knew, but most of our friends did not. And that may seem like an awkward and difficult thing to recommend to do, but it was the right thing for us. Our children were very, very young. We told them the truth about the fact that Dad was sick. We told them that it was serious, but that was it. And I think, in retrospect, if I look back over the years of our fighting, the thing I would say is that the fight against the cancer was a part of our life. It wasn't our life. It enabled us to clear a space in which we just lived. So if I go back and listening to what you're talking about the lovely spaces, even in the cancer fight, those 7 years were lovely years. There was a fight, there was this massive fight, but there was also life, because we kept a space for ourselves to live. So I guess part of my advice will be a little different, but maybe not so much different, is take the advice, build yourself a team, but keep your life to yourself and allow yourself to have an actual life.
That is, I mean, that's profound advice, and yet it probably the most difficult thing to do. And also when you've got, I mean, and Jody, you touched on this, and maybe Dawn, you can talk some more about the financial realities of what you're facing. You know, how do you take care of both ends, find that space, get your team? I don't know, Dawn.
That becomes difficult because, like you said, there aren't a lot of things out there in place after Medicare. My mom has good coverage and everything like that, but they don't cover a lot of things. She's not quite ready to go into a home, but anything we want to do, if we want to have someone come in and just stay with her, if someone's not available, this all becomes very, very expensive. And it's true, there is a plan that, that should be put in place. I was totally unprepared for that. You know, I never thought of my mother, you know, having dementia and not being able to live by herself and on her own and not eating, not taking her medication, still giving her insulin at night, making sure she takes all these pills during the day. She wasn't doing that for herself. So now we have her with us. And the cost of care, she's so fearful. There's a lot of fear in a person with dementia. They fear being alone. They fear even going to the doctor, just going to a doctor's appointments, they fear that. So I tried to bring in, when I had someone that had to come in, I had to come in as a friend, you know, knowing that she's a nurse, but let her get familiar with her.
But here's, you know, here's the other question I have. I'm sure you're facing this. How do you not lose yourself? How do you take care of yourself? Because if you go down, and I'm sure you're worried about this,
yeah,
you all worry about this. If you go down, who takes care of these two ends? And how do you take care of yourself when you are, your whole day from beginning to end is taking care of everybody else?
Yeah. I have to, for myself personally, I had to back it up. And I had to pray. I do a little chanting. I meditate. And I get a quiet space. I go sit by the water. And then I have conversation. I would talk to professionals. There's this one particular social worker, and she was trying to guide me in the right direction that would be beneficial for everyone and financially apt for everyone to handle. But it was a little difficult trying to get my brother involved.
Amanda?
I guess going back to what I said at the beginning,
yeah,
it depends on what you what you're demanding of yourself. And I think every single one of you out there are demanding that you do it perfectly.
Yeah.
You're all saying, I've got to do this perfectly. And that was why I wrote the book, is because I thought, I'm going to do this perfectly. I'm going to spare my kids, my kids' childhood. I'm going to win the Pulitzer Prize, which I did. And I'm going to save my husband's life. I'm going to save my husband's life. And my personal efforts in this thing was going to save his life. And so after he died, even a year after he died, I'm still saying, how come I couldn't do this better? How come I couldn't have done it better? And in retrospect, when I went back and looked at everything that was happening, I thought, I should have been kinder to myself. And the message I'm going to say to you is, be kinder to yourself.
That's exactly what I said.
Be kinder to yourself and recognize that you're doing the best you can. And all you can do is the best you can. And I think part of the stress in your lives comes from the gap between the best you can and perfect. And so if you look around and say, I'm doing what my financial resources allow me to do, I'm doing what my physical resources allow me to do, I'm doing what my social situation allows me to do, listen to what she's doing. She's got her mother, herself, her son, her grandson. Oh, my God. Is she doing a bad job? I mean, she's probably dropping the ball everywhere, right? I mean, every single day she's dropping the ball and
yep,
something's screwing up, right?
Yep.
Okay, so what?
I would also just like to add that I see a lot of caregivers, especially good daughters, really struggle with the issue of a resistant parent who is refusing help. And this is not uncommon. And they do all this work, and they put a plan in place, and they take all this advice, and then the parent refuses help. And in many cases, the parent is in a risky situation, maybe living alone, maybe at risk for falling, may have gone in and out of the hospital. And what I see caregivers do is they're pulling their hair out. All of a sudden, they feel that they have to be the rescuer. Now, meanwhile, let's look at the parent. Assume it's a mother. This person has been making decisions their whole life, sometimes not so good decisions, but they're an adult. They're making decisions. What happens when we flip over into a caregiver role is we feel we need to take control. We have to prevent this person from any harm coming, and now I'm in charge. And that's actually a misnomer. It isn't a role reversal. And I know I've heard that term a lot. Our parents are still our parents. And we have to respect that. We have to respect their autonomy. We have to respect their ability to make bad decisions, and then there are repercussions of that. So I think giving yourself permission to step back and recognize there are limits to how much you can do is really important in terms of taking care of yourself.
I want to stop right now because I've already cheated you 10 minutes for Q&A, and I want to start Q&A, but before we get to that, I want to remind you that Amanda is going to be signing her book after this at 11 o'clock downstairs in the main hall. Amanda and Jody have, especially Jody has some very specific resources that you can use. It's going to be online for the Pennsylvania Women's Conference. If you look her up, you'll be able to find a whole list of resources and tips from our panelists. So let's just start now. If you have a question, just come right up to the mic. Go ahead, and then Beverly, come up to the mic. Go ahead.
Hi. So it just builds on what you were just talking about, the resistance. My father turned 79 2 days ago, and as far as he's concerned, he's fine. Nothing's ever going to happen to him. He's never dying. He's actually said those words, "I'm never dying." And so I've been trying very hard to do what I can preventatively and to plan. It's just impossible. And my sister's telling me the best advice that she's given me is to just accept that he's going to be resistant and that he won't accept help and that there's nothing I can do.
Can you hear in the back? So she's just saying that if you can speak up. She's just saying her dad is resistant and said, and your sister has said, don't worry about it.
The only thing we can do is accept. And is that the case? Is there anything else I can do? I've been trying for years to get my parents to, we're not in the same city. That's also a challenge. They're in Boston. I'm here in Philadelphia. I've tried desperately to get them to move here.
And that's often a case. I experience that. You're spread out, which makes it even harder. Advice?
I would just like to say one strategy is to choose the most innocuous, non-threatening intervention for help, as opposed to the most significant, which is a move or a real loss of control and independence. And what we sometimes see as effective is if you suggest something like a housekeeper once a week to, you know, pick up the mail and do some laundry. Oftentimes, once someone connects with a caregiver, they're much more willing to accept help. But the notion of having someone in the house that's a stranger usually makes people feel like, no, forget about it. So I think introducing something incrementally that's non-threatening is probably worth a try.
Does she need to get her sister on board? They're on the same page? Is it your sister?
My sister. We're on the same page.
Oh, okay.
They'll do whatever we can when they're willing. I mean, we've tempted them with, we will give you unlimited tech support for free if you come move to Philadelphia. You know, we get there. How do you open Windows? Is the kind of phone calls I get, really, literally. How do I use my cell phone? I've gotten that. That's also with age, is that I've taught them how to use their cell phones over and over and over again. But anyway, great advice. Thank you.
Beverly, did you want to?
So first, I just want to say that I'm really so moved by the panelists and your personal journeys and how you are so willing to share that with us. It's really deeply moving and very personal. I was just wondering if any of you have actually worked with professional geriatric care managers?
No.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention I am a professional geriatric care manager, and I'm one of 2,000 people across the country who are here to help you develop a plan, visit your loved one, have family meetings, strategize, coach, provide compassionate manipulation, and to help maintain your sanity. And I'm just one of 2,000 of us across the country. So if people live different places, all you do is go to caremanager.org, and we're here to help you. We're here to prevent chaos in your life and help you manage the journey. And it's true that we cost money, but I think what we save people in terms of managing their finances appropriately and the kind of advice and resources and helping you get entitlements. You know, do you know that if your loved one actually served during World War II or the Korean War, you might be entitled to money from the VA? There's so many ways that we can help people remain sane. So I just want to support everybody to find out about my incredible profession that I love dearly and feel passionate about, because we're here to answer all the issues you've been discussing, except we can't help you find money that's not there.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to echo that. I have worked a lot with geriatric care managers, and
great.
We really connect families with GCMs all over the country.
That's
and
great.
Beautiful.
And a huge, huge value to people. So thank you.
Yeah, that's great. What was the website again? Care manager?
Caremanager.org.
Caremanager.org.
Thank
okay.
you.
Good.
Awesome.
Hi. I'm in a triangle. I have Luann's problem where my parents divorced when I was a year old. I'm an only child. My father moved upstate New York, like 5-6 hours away. And he's 85 now and has decided to reconnect with me because I'm the only person, I'm his only real family. So I have the guilt of what are my obligations to this person. And then my husband is 17 years older than I am, and he's had 3 different types of cancer. Each one, thankfully, has survived, but they have caused some early Alzheimer's with him. So sometimes he's with it, sometimes he's not. I work full-time. I have to go to all his doctor's appointments. He has 7 specialists. Have to be the referrals, the everything that you need to do, the prescriptions, getting his pills out, ordering them. I mean, it's a full-time job in itself, and I work a full-time job. And then I have a mentally challenged 17-year-old granddaughter who we spend a lot of time with to help her with her issues. So I am going to contact you first off, because my husband's 75. But my question really is, where does the caregiver go to unload, I guess I could say? Because I have to be perfect, as Amanda has said. I have to make sure that everybody is perfect and that I do my job. So I'm also worried about the finances. That was the other thing. What's going to happen with, husband's 75, I don't know where to go to start planning. You said some type of insurance.
Yeah, what was that, the long-term
care insurance?
Yeah, it's right now.
Too late. Too late for it.
Okay. So I'm screwed.
Not necessarily. No.
Jump in, ladies.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there you should explore potential financial resources, and I couldn't say offhand, but I think a geriatric care manager could help you. There are ways to get on Medicaid. There are areas on aging that have programs for people. There's Alzheimer's Association. There's senior centers. There are some programs that will provide a range of resources, and there are caregiver support groups as well. Mm-hmm. So I think I have some information on some of the websites.
You're going to put on our website.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So I think that you aren't screwed. That you're in a tough situation, but there is help out there.
Dawn, how does she unload?
And
she
say,
like, where'd she go?
To unload, yeah, seriously. Again, I'm taking my cues from Cancer Treatment Centers of America. Mm-hmm. I have been doing Reiki. I do acupuncture. I do massage therapy and mind-body therapy.
But when does she find time? When does she?
No,
what?
It's not just the time.
It's the finances, too.
The
there
finances.
Are a lot of, and yoga, too. We do yoga there. There are a lot of places, community places, that offer adult situations like the YMCA, where you can get cost-effective classes that, just to learn how to de-stress. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, it's real important for you to do that, to make the time for yourself, because if you don't make the time for yourself, you're going to explode. But in doing that, forgive yourself. Because we have a tendency to do everything and be everything to everybody and then punish ourselves for not being able to do more and feel like we're cheating someone else out of it. But what about you?
That's when you eat constantly. That's why I'm overweight.
One other thing I might mention, many companies have some resources for caregiving employees that many people don't even know exist.
Really?
So you know, one of the things that I try to do is get people to understand that they have some benefits and resources. So I would find out from HR, your work-life department, if there's any resources for caregiving employees, whether it's flexibility, whether it's an EAP. You may not know about it, and it may be no charge to you.
Amanda, do you have any advice on this in terms of how she takes care of herself?
Yeah, I guess I would say that those things are all good, but it mostly takes place in your head. I can remember feeling guilty when I was going to work, right? I'd say, oh my God, they need me for this, and why am I going to work? And then all of a sudden it went, you know, off of my head. If I don't go to work, we got nothing. We got nothing. And so I was shortchanging my work. You know, there's a passage in my book where I'm like tilting the computer screen so nobody can see that what I'm really doing is going and doing research. Because I was so pulled. But if you think about what's the engine that's driving all this, it's you. And, you know, like, I think you ought to give her a big hand, guys. You know?
Seriously.
You know? I mean, A husband with three kinds of cancer and some kind of dementia and a dementally challenged grandchild, and a father who's trying to reconnect after however many years. I mean, what do you expect from yourself?
I know.
What do you expect from yourself? You know, dial back a little what you expect from yourself, and I can't tell you with the relationships there who's gonna have to give. But if you give, the whole system gives, you know, and your job, which you're probably feeling guilty about going to and trying to figure out, is really one of the cores of, you know, all the resources that you've got. The financial resources that you have are coming from the fact that you get up every morning, put your clothes on, go to work.
Right. And I have the best boss.
Yeah. Aww. So. Yeah.
Well, there's something good.
I mean, she's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
Thank you for all your advice.
We have time, I think, for one more question. Anybody? Come on up. Oh, we've got two. We'll try to do two.
Let's do two. Come on up.
Yeah, come on up. Yeah.
Come on up.
We'll do two.
We'll be short.
Well, first of all, I'm an only child. I have a 19-year-old son with autism, and my mother's 90 years old. And he is in a group home, but he's violent. Like last Friday, he attacked one of his caregivers. How do you deal with the depression that goes along with it? I mean, I have counseling services, but that's very limited. I get like six a year. And sometimes I just can't deal with the depression. And I have to stay very positive, work full time. I have to be positive for my mother and around him when I see him. So it's kind of like the secret depression that you hold in.
Well, I mean, it's very real, the depression. And I mentioned before that caregivers are at a 4 times greater risk for depression than the population. So it is something that can be treated, number one. And, you know, 6 sessions a year, unfortunately, is really not adequate. And I think you also... Oh, I'm sorry. Is it on? Hello?
No? Try another one.
Okay. Hello? Is this on?
Did all of our mics go? All of our mics went off.
We all just got the hook.
There's one.
Hello.
Okay. And that's a really tough situation that you're in. So I think, you know, some of the things that my panelists have suggested about finding ways to step back and take care of yourself and to really recognize that this is a very difficult challenge, to find supports in a network of people that you can turn to for very specific help, and don't be afraid to ask for help and to reach out to people. And I think the combination of really, you know, addressing the depression, it's real, it needs to be treated, and getting the kind of support you need and being realistic about what you can do are some strategies.
Amanda, did you want to?
Yeah, and I guess I would say, you know, you've been caring for people until you become ill. Depression is an illness. You're ill. Guess what? You need to take care of the illness. And you know, counseling is one thing. I'm a big fan of drugs.
Mm-hmm. The right fan of drugs.
She said it.
I'm in a similar situation as the woman who spoke before. My husband and I are 18 years apart. He has a brain meningioma, so it actually affects some of his memory and things like that. For the most part, he's functioning, but still has issues. Elderly mother, elderly father-in-law, and we have three children, 14, 11, and 9. They depend on me for absolutely everything. When my 14-year-old daughter found out Monday night I wasn't coming home because I was coming here, she was sitting at the table sobbing. Like, he doesn't help with homework, he doesn't anything, and it's become a very tumultuous household. You know, he chimes in here or there, like, they know that he causes disruption. He's let, you know, pops on all night long, just all kinds of craziness. So they just depend on me for absolutely everything, and I think it's just that the tension in the household that just makes it so much more challenging.
Do you have any help at all? Do you have anyone else besides you're it?
I'm it. Yeah, even for my mom, for his dad, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think my bigger struggle is a lot of people look at me and they're like, oh my gosh, like why do you stay? Like, it, you know, and I'm like, and I actually am a cancer survivor myself. I'm like, when I got sick, why, he didn't leave me. You know, he has an issue. It's not fair for me to leave. But at the same time, there's, you know, like, how do you solve that?
Wow, there's so
that's big, and we just have a minute here.
Yeah, there's so many dynamics going on here. Support group definitely for yourself. A support group definitely for yourself. And you're going to have to reach out in the community. There are places that you can turn to help with the children, you know, and bringing someone into the home to give you a break. You really need that because you're the backbone, you know, and you can't let yourself and everything else fall. Absolutely, absolutely. You know what? Knowledge is power to me. You know what I'm saying? Fear is what gets me up and go to my treatments. Fear puts me in. Fear is my best friend now. And I was so afraid of losing everything that it just motivated me to find anything that I could to help.
I feel so guilty for being so annoyed with them.
Don't.
And you know, I would turn it around. It's been 5 years since my husband died, and so that's a total of 12 years since he was diagnosed. And my children are now 18 and 23. And I have to say, we spend so much time trying to protect them from hard things. Hard things are not bad things for children. You know, I look at my children now and watch how they've processed what went on. It was nothing like yours, but, you know, you may not need to be quite so responsible for their happiness, and it may be, you know, a favor than a blessing that you give to them to help them shoulder some of that themselves. It's a hard lot that they've been dealt, but as we've all seen, there's blessings that come from hard lots as well. And I can see with my children that they've achieved some blessings from their hard lot. And you might not need to protect them quite so much.
Yeah, we've never really discussed.
Be it, you guys could become a team.
Yeah.
You guys could become a team to help each other through it.
Right.
You know, it's a process of.
And you know, you are, and to end the session, and unfortunately we do have to end, but you are here today, and you can connect, and our panelists are going to be here. Again, Amanda's going to be signing books. I want to... Jody will be here, Dawn will be here throughout the day. Talk. Leave here with some ideas of what you're going to do. Continue this conversation during the day. And I thank you so much. I thank our panelists here. Fabulous.
Thank you.
Don't leave today without feeling like you have some ideas of what you're going to do next to help your situation. Thank you.